The Purdue Crop Chat is presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension Soybean Specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension Corn Specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
From the Normandy Barn at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, we're kicking off the Indiana State Fair the right way, and that is with the Purdue Crop Chat podcast. I'm Eric Pfeiffer with the stars of the show, Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean, Sean Castile. Hello,
howdy,
Sean.
Howdy, Eric.
We've got some exciting things to talk about today, and some not so exciting things to talk about today. But first off, we have to just kind of recognize where we're at and what we're doing. We're here in the Normandy Barn. And if people find us the right way, they can actually see that because we're doing this via video.
That's right.
It's not the first. We have done video before, but we're going to start making this kind of a regular thing. It's kind of
frightening.
You know, I just got back from Disney, but I think I'm the one that came back and started making dreams come true for Sean. I think his whole purpose of doing this podcast was to become an eventual TV star and find some sort of recurring role.
Okay. Oh, I don't.
Soap opera, perhaps.
The dumb schmuck that comes over for neighbor, is that what you're calling me?
I think that's exactly the role that's right up your alley. But, you know, we are going to start doing this via video. And we're also excited to announce that we're going to be doing a Purdue Extension podcast network. We're adding four new podcasts to complement this one. And we'll have more information on that in the coming days. Be sure to check out HoosierAgToday.com. We'll have more information on that. But we're excited about what's going on here at the Indiana State Fair. I mentioned I did just get back from Disney. I've been traveling. Sean, you've been traveling as well.
Yep.
Dan, you're a homebody, so you've been just
He's about to travel.
Oh, you're about to travel.
He's about to.
I was actually traveling earlier this week, and then we'll travel again. Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll tell you just quickly some of my travel stories. We had a great time at Disney. It is a magical place. Epcot, it was fun. It was good. It was great.
Everyone was happy all the time.
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far, but it was a very good trip.
Good.
It was bookended by really weird things. So my son, we went down for the basketball tournament. You know, that was kind of the whole reason we did this big thing.
Sure.
So it turned into family vacation. He only got to play in one basketball game while we were down there.
Oh, wow.
He ended up with stitches in his chin after getting like punched.
Oh, it wasn't from a Disney ride?
No, it was not from a Disney ride. This was during the basketball game.
Okay.
He opened the thing up, and it was bad news. So,
oh, mercy.
We started the trip with an ER visit to get stitches
for
the eldest. And then, on our way back home, we stop to have dinner, and I go to take a bite of my Caesar salad. I'm like, ouch, that's sharp. And I go to pull my fork out, and it wouldn't come out. Yeah, there was a shaving of the fork off the side, and it went through my lip.
Oh my goodness.
So this a great vacation bookended by blood coming from the faces of Pfeiffers.
Okay. All right.
Just, you know, really great trip.
And now we're going to have, you know, more videos of you. So
yes.
You got to watch what you do.
I know. I've got to take care of this, you know.
Well, yeah, you do.
But Sean, your travels?
Yeah.
Just as adventurous?
Not as adventurous. We had some good fishing. We had some good swimming. Played some softball. So great travels. Got some good food, good barbecue. So I don't have anything quite as exciting as that. Maybe heat exhaustion a day or two, but that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that happens. You were traveling around the state, right, Dan? Is that what you were
doing? He was still
traveling?
Working. Somebody's got to work.
You were working and checking out some corn.
Yep.
I suppose we ought to talk about corn and soybeans. It's kind of what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
But Dan, let's talk about corn conditions out there. It's just so variable all across the state. We talk about this really each year for the past several years, but maybe this year more so than any other year, we see this variability across the state. We're also seeing variability across multiple states here in the Corn Belt. And it seems like if you look to our, you know, good to excellent rating, things just aren't looking good in Indiana if you look at it just from that perspective.
Yeah, I think it's hard to gauge that rating because of how variable it is. You know, I joke, yesterday I was at a field day and kind of heading towards eastern Indiana, and I had a farmer come up to me and tell me he has the best crop he's ever had in his life. Then I had another farmer come up to me and said, this is the worst crop I've had in my life. So that kind of gave me an idea of where things are. Just depends on where you're at. I know the Eastern Southeast has struggled this year. It was a struggle with planting and just getting the crop out of the ground, and a lot of crop got replanted in those areas. But I do reiterate that there's a lot of good corn around the state too. I was able to travel a lot of the western side of the state, go to the western side of the state, you know, Vermilion County, Park County, those are in really good shape. Northwest Indiana, we were a little concerned about, but then they caught quite a bit of rain. So I think that area really bounced back this week as well. And then even through central Indiana, still a lot of good acres there. But yeah, I've been asked how many times this year of, okay, where's the crop at? What does it look like? And my answer is the same every time. It just depends on where you are in the state. So it's just highly variable. But I do think with the weather we're having, we've got quite a bit of moisture, getting some cooler temps showing up. I do think some of the conditions of the crop, especially with it in pollination right now and starting early grain fill, that actually maybe some of this will help if we can keep the disease out of the crop.
Well, we'll talk disease. We'll talk about some of the other things that are going on. But let's get an update on soybeans here as well. It's a similar story.
It
if you
is.
Look to our good to excellent rating, it seems like we're just having a really bad year.
I mean, it's holding off on the, I mean, we're 61 good to excellent on soy. I think corn's probably similar. And so I wouldn't say it's a bad year. I wouldn't go that far. You're just going to want to have the sky is falling mentality, Eric. I mean, you are in the news media. I get
it's
it.
It's what I do. You know,
I would not call it a bad year.
Get the milk and the bread and the egg. Yes.
Now, if you couple that with the prices, okay, then we can really start about it. And that's not where I'm going to talk about that.
But comparatively, if you look at years past, we've been much higher than that.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly had higher ratings in the recent years and breaking record yields on the average for the state for several years in a row, or you look at the last 5 to 7, we've had a lot of record yields. There's going to be, I'll echo the same thing, there are spots in the state that look tremendous, and so they are a record yielding kind of year. You think about the Northwest and how dry it was. So in particular, you know, it was going into D0, abnormally dry, going drought one status. And I don't even know, in the month of June into July, a lot of those areas, I don't even know if they got a few drops of rain, period. Mm-hmm. And so the last couple weeks have made a huge difference on that area. It's really turned around. I know I visited a few weeks ago before the trip and had some other travels, but corn was, you know, it was rolling up tight. In the middle of the morning, and beans were already flipping over, clamping their leaves. So, I mean, they were very drought stressed. But I was there earlier this week, and it's night and day. It looks tremendous. You think about, there's not a lot of stress in terms of loss on the soybean front. There are shorter plants, but we want a nice compact plant anyway. And so I think we still have some, probably most of that yield potential there. We've got other areas that look tremendous. I was just in the southeast part yesterday, and it's tough. There's no doubt about that. You're driving down, there's soybeans that are V4, V5, haven't even canopied, and there's beans that look great in R4, and so they're already starting to fill the pods. And so it is a story of the haves and the have-nots.
I'm curious about northeast Indiana for both crops, because this seems to be, you know, even in past years when we've had those record yields, that seems to be the problem area. Like, if we could get the same out of that area as what we do the rest of the state, boy, we're really breaking records.
Yeah.
What's it like this year?
Yeah, early on, that northeast, it struggled as well. I think there's a lot of areas that had problems getting establishment, or once they're established, they had wet feet. That soil can have some just tendencies to just not drain out well. Mm. And so then you have saturated conditions, and then you throw the insult to injury. If they got the 3 to 4 to 6 inch rain, I mean, it's just not gonna drain. And so they look pretty poor early on. I dare say that they have been turning around in the recent weeks, and I don't know, corn, you've seen similar things?
Yeah, Northeast isn't in the same, you know, they've struggled the aspects this year in terms of getting planted, a lot of, you know, later planted stuff. But I would say in terms of conditions in that area of the state, it's not at the level of what Southeast has had to deal with. We have multiple trials in Northeast. I actually work with a farmer in Northeast Indiana. Stuff has actually turned around pretty well in that area of the state. It was really highly variable to start, but I would dare to say that a lot of it is kind of turned around in that area.
Well, now that we've kind of gone around the state, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are really impacting the crops themselves. And here we are.
I gave you this opportunity, so you better do it well.
Yeah, this is State Fair. We're opening it up. state fair disease?
It's here.
It's here.
It's here.
We're finding it, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I talk about it most every year, state fair disease, sudden death syndrome, or SDS. And so definitely showing up, and not just showing up when Darcy and my trials were looking for it, inoculating for it. Tuesday I was out scouting around in the northwest part of the state and west central at that point, and there's the modeling that's showing up in the leaves, and they're starting to coalesce to get to the intravenous sclerosis. So yes, SDS is showing up. Let's go back to, it's a disease that's soil-borne and infects whenever that vegetative growth is going through kind of a wet period. Cool can kind of exacerbate it a little bit, but definitely the wetter period. And so now it shows up as we're starting seed fill and kind of clogging the tissues, that vascular tissue. So that's showing up. But we had Darcy on a few episodes ago, and we need to be mindful, okay, is it SDS or is it the other two diseases that show the exact same foliar symptoms? So those are going to be the brown stem rot that we've had for years. Those two, brown stem rot, SDS, have been there. But the recent one, red crown rot, is the next one we need to be mindful of. So see the symptomology, let's get out of the truck, dig up those plants, and see what's going on.
And again, there's nothing that can be done for it. I mean, even a lemon shake up here at the state, nothing.
It can make you feel better.
I feel a little bit better about it, but it's not. There's nothing to do at this point.
I haven't done that trial yet, so,
I have put sugar out on beans before. I've done that trial. I put molasses, corn syrup, straight sugar. The only thing I ever saw was more Japanese beetles, but.
But at this point, nothing to be done except learn from it, right?
Learn. Identify if you've got, I mean, identification, scouting is a huge part of what we do in farming and agronomy, and say, understand what the problem we have so we can manage it, right? If we're going out there to manage SDS and it's red crown rot, those are different mechanisms, right? And so we need to know what the problem is, and so then we can address it. Now, current season, all three of those in particular are soil-borne diseases. There's nothing that you can do at this moment to fix it. It's like, okay, what did I do this year? Do I have an environment for that? Do I have conditions now that I'm always gonna have this pathogen? And then can I manage my way out of it in the coming years with whether there's varieties or the planting dates or anything else that comes to mind?
For corn, Dan, I don't know, do we need to get you a couch to lay on so that you can kind of just get some of this stuff out? I don't know, can we get a couch for Dan? We got a lot of things going on. We've got disease, we've got
a lot of weird things
in the news.
Yeah, a lot of weird things going on.
I've seen you in the news. You were a star in the Indianapolis Star here recently talking about corn sweat.
Oh,
we'll get to that. but also in the tassel wrap. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, it is what you just said. It's just the wrapping of the tassel, and it
romaine lettuce, or what do you have it wrapped in?
In the upper leaves of the corn. So we often call the flag leaf the first leaf below the tassel, but those upper leaves were staying tightly wrapped around that tassel. And we talk about pollination with corn is such a critical window, and also a really short window. So anything that throws off that synchrony or that timing of either the silks emerging or the tassel emerging can potentially impact pollination. So what was really unique this year is that we had a lot of instances of this tassel basically remaining tightly wrapped within these leaves and remaining that way for a fairly long period of time, 3-4 days. Typically the tassel will come out, you'll see leaves kind of spikes across the field, and it'll wrap and then it'll unfurl and release that tassel. But we're seeing that it was kind of hanging on, and it was keeping that tassel tightly wrapped. The silks were out, so the silks were ready there to receive that pollen, and they just weren't. And this kind of took a life on its own. The first calls I had on it were actually out of Iowa. So I had a couple of industry agronomists reach out to me out of Iowa that was seeing it, and it was really unique. We weren't really sure what it was. And first thoughts were, was it herbicide or was it, something going on in that area? And then I got a call out of Kansas and then Illinois, and then all of a sudden it was taking on a life of its own in Indiana. So it was actually, as soon as I started getting those reports, went out to actually some of our trials and started to find it as well. So yeah, it was kind of an interesting phenomenon where these leaves were remaining tightly wrapped around the tassel. This I guess the vegetative response of that is not new. It's just we typically see it in early vegetative stages in corn. We've talked about rapid growth syndrome, where we see these periods of development where we have cooler temperatures. That crop, you know, corn is relying on thermal heat units for its movement through its development stages, and going from periods of cool weather, you know, in many cases rainfall, where we're having slow development, and then ramping up to high 90 degree temps is where we can see some of that rapid growth syndrome. And actually, I think that's, it's kind of a function of that, where I went to some of these fields and where we found it pretty significantly, went and pulled the weather data from those areas. And in both instances where I found it, and they were actually showing up in two separate different weeks, where we had this about a 35 degree swing from lower nighttime temps back up to about 95 degrees. And it was often accompanied with rainfall as well. So I think it was a function of that. We've also seen hybrid differences as well. Hybrids that have different kind of tassel morphology, where that main tassel branch is a little bit wider, a little bit longer, those tended to be a little bit more susceptible to the tassel wrap. But for the most part, it's fairly new. I had a lot of conversations with people that have been doing it much longer than I have, and they had never seen it, or maybe they'd seen it once. So we're still learning about it as well. You know, the yield impacts, it's really hard to say. I stress, like in Indiana, I think we're sitting pretty good in Indiana. A lot of the areas I thought, okay, maybe we'll have some pollination issues in corn, throwing off that timing, but actually went back to a lot of those fields and they looked okay. But I have seen a lot of photos out of Iowa and Illinois. You talk about those states that have pretty good condition ratings, that they had some pollination troubles. Now, what the percentage of that is and how widespread it is, it's really hard to say.
So when you get into this, you're talking about that tassel being wrapped up, right? And
yep.
We think about, okay, you got the pollen that's going to come out. It's supposed to go down to the silks,
yep.
Right? And each silk goes to each kernel, right? So
yep.
The pollination issues that you're referring to is, okay, maybe the early pollination, so at the bud of the ear,
yeah.
is that where you're having the issue? I mean,
yes.
It's one thing to be wrapped up, but like, what's so what about it? So it's the pollination on the bud of the ear, right?
Bud of the ear. And the bud of the ear, those silks are those correspond to the silks that emerge first. So
right.
If the tassel is behind, the pollen shed is behind, and those silks are already present, those silks, they're often viable for about 10 days, but peak receptivity of pollen is about only about 4 or 5 days after they emerge, and then it kind of goes down from there. So if it's behind and those first silks are out there,
yeah.
They're hanging out and they're saying, hey, where's my pollen? And it's not coming. And then they lose their viability or receptivity to pollen. Then that's when we have issues where it's at the base of the ear. And that's a little different than typically what we always refer to as tip back,
yep.
Where we have missing kernels on the tip. Typically the most common symptom or stress we'll have is delayed silks. But another aspect of this tassel wrapping where the tassels are becoming delayed is that hybrids today just silk so much earlier than what they used to. And that's a function of genetic breeding. It's a drought tolerance mechanism, because in drought conditions, silks get delayed. So they've kind of bred over time that, hey, let's account for that by making these hybrids silk very early. But in conditions, and I've seen it in really good growing conditions where we have good moisture, and that's many of the cases where we saw this tassel wrapping occurring. So in those conditions, period, we see pretty early silking. And then you combine that with this wrapped tassel that the tassels are behind as well, and that's causing that synchrony issue. So in many of the fields I was in Indiana, it's all about timing. You know, it's instances where they pollinated fine. Some where you can tell they're actually pollinate, but it was a little bit behind. So some of the kernels at the base were a little bit behind in their development, but they were fertilized. But I have seen pictures out of Iowa and Illinois that it is missing kernels or scattered kernels at the base of the ear. So it can be alarming, and I've really stressed for people to walk their fields, and if you were able to see it or if not able to see it, hey, just start pulling some of those husks back and taking a look at those kernels. It's pretty easy to tell as those kernels develop if you had poor pollination or not.
So with that, I mean, obviously we talked about yield components of corn, soybeans. I mean, you got to have the ears with the kernels there, but how much flex do we have then? Okay, we don't have those early kernels on the butt, but can you get some back on seed size, right? It depends on seed fill, right?
Yeah, so that's what makes like getting a yield loss estimate really hard, because when you have missing kernels on the ear, actually the kernels next to it will compensate for that some. So they'll, if you ever see, you know, jumbled ears or anything like that, or just kind of oddities instead of the straight rows, many cases where there's a space missing, those kernels will compensate some. They're not going to compensate fully, but that's what makes it really difficult to try and, you know, estimate what the yield loss is going to be, because some of the seed size, some of the kernel weight is going to potentially make up for that.
But that's what everyone wants to know, Dan. That's what
I want. I want the number.
I want to say, Eric, we're at that time of the year. Yeah. What's the number? It's August. He's going to say, what is our number?
Yeah, down to the decimal point. That's what you want.
You're already ahead of me.
Yeah, see? August here. So he's like, what's the number?
Yeah, I mean, we're here. Why not? But that's what folks want to know is mm-hmm. what is this yield impact going to be? And like I say, it's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you can quote me on this and then it'll be the exact opposite, but I do think it's pretty minor in the state of Indiana.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, talking about some of the other things that are impacting corn right now, mm-hmm. we've got tar spot, obviously. Yep. It's been turned on in Moore County since we last spoke to Darcy. Mm-hmm. Maybe after this past week, we might see a little bit more of that.
If I was a betting man, I would say after this week, it's going to be a lot more widespread than what it is now. That's the thing with tar spot, is that it doesn't like heat. We've been hot the last few weeks. That has drastically shifted. So you think about continual leaf wetness, high humidity. We've had a lot of rain go through, but now we're switching to these cooler temperatures, and that's probably going to drive tar spot. And we've seen it in a lot of counties, but at really low levels, low severity levels, lower canopy. But I haven't, you know, if I had to guess after this week, and I had a lot of conversations with farmers about should I spray or not, and it was really they were just waiting for this week and to monitor it for this week, because there's a lot of expectations that tar spot will pick up.
So let's go. We got the environmental conditions that are fit for it. In terms of how late, again, Darcy, you've talked about it, I just mm-hmm. want to bring it back. Okay, some of this has already been silky and it's already been pollinated. So, I mean, how late can we go mm-hmm. and still get successful control or prevention with the tar spot? Are we talking about 2 or 3? How late on the corn side?
Actually, all the way to R5 for Dent. And so that's what I've had, a lot of these conversations I've had with farmers and Darcy as well, is I'd almost rather you be a little bit on the later side than earlier, because you think about the activity of these fungicides. If I spray, you know, even before tassel, and spraying at tassel is the most consistent, you know, if you had to choose a time to spray, it's going to be at the R1, R2 growth stage. But if you're really monitoring it, we've had good responses, a lot of the plant pathologists too. If you're able to, you know, wait a little bit, monitor that disease, scout, okay, it's there, mm-hmm. it's starting to move, if we have the environmental conditions, and then we can get the most out of that activity window of that fungicide, especially as we get into the grain fill stages for corn. A lot of data the plant pathologists show you can spray all the way through R4, all the way up to R5.
If the disease, if the pathogen the disease, is high enough, right?
Yep. Yeah. So
that's a pretty wide window.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And in recent years with tar spot, we've talked about, okay, well, we've got it, but it showed up kind of late mm-hmm. and it didn't have that much of a yield impact.
Yeah.
At what point is it too late? We're not too late right now, right?
No,
if it shows
no.
up now, it's still going to wreak some havoc.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still kind of the same thing. As you get to Dent, you know, R5 growth stage, and if you're just starting to see it at that point in time, it's usually often too late. You're not going to see a big benefit from that application. But the big thing that we're seeing around the state is that it's there. A lot of counties have been highlighted. A lot of counties have it. A lot of people have seen it. You know, even in our own trials, we started to see it this week. In low levels, lower leaves, we're seeing it. But a lot of those areas are in, you know, R1, R2 growth stage, even R3 growth stage at the latest. And that's still a good time, especially with this cooler weather. That thing with tar spot is it can move quick. We've had a lot of gray leaf spot around the state. I'd say that's been most prevalent up to this point. That moves a lot slower. You can kind of scout it a lot better and monitor it a lot better. But tar spot, once it starts taking off, it can move. So you have to really be on top of it with those applications.
Let's take a time out here on the Purdue Crop Chat. And when we come back, we're going to talk more corn, Sorry, Sean.
That's right.
But they've got a lot more problems than you do.
They
right
do
now,
have
think,
a lot so of problems. They are Dan, that diva.
Dan's got a lot of problems.
He does. True. He does. We'll get a therapy session going.
Yeah. Southern rust, not just in the South anymore. So we'll talk about that when we come back here on Purdue Crop Chat.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
And we're back, the Normandy Barn here at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, the Indiana State Fair underway. We hope that you will join us. We're here a lot here throughout the fair. If you see us, I'll be the one walking around with a microphone.
It's like you're begging to have friends. You're like, come, please join us. Yeah. It's like, I need a friend.
I need a friend. but no, dude, come by through August 17th, State Fair runs, closed on Mondays. Don't show up then, we won't be here, nor will anyone else. But yeah, do come by and support your Indiana farmers at the get a ribeye sandwich, get a garbage burger. That's our favorite.
It is. Oh, some pit potatoes. Yeah.
So good. So yeah, come by the Indiana State Fair. We're going to be here throughout bringing you all the latest information and news and doing some podcasts as well. That's what we're doing here today on the Purdue Crop Chat. Dan, I mentioned you got a lot of problems, man. I mean, you got a lot of problems.
My wife tells me that a lot. Yeah.
she's smart. Except she married you. I don't. Either way.
Well.
But Dan, we've got an issue now. Southern rust. We talked about it on the last podcast with Darcy, and then I think like a day later, you pull up her map, and it's like, okay, we might have southern rust in one of our southern counties.
Yep.
Now, as you look at Darcy's map, it's spread all over the place, and even all the way up in Porter County, Indiana. So southern rust is not just in the South, not even just southern Indiana at this point. We've got some issues here.
Yeah, it's really moved, and it's been found in areas that even in my time here since I've been at Purdue, haven't seen it. We actually had it confirmed in some of our trials just this week in West Lafayette, and that's the first time I've seen southern rust that far up. Southern rust is another one. It can be pretty devastating of a disease. It can move pretty quickly. I think they've documented upwards of 40 to 45% yield losses in severe cases. What's unique about this year is we typically see it in the southern half of the state. You know, southern rust is very different than tar spot. We kind of get a clean slate every year, and then it moves up with systems. It's a tropical disease, moves up from the south, moves up with those Gulf weather systems. So you can kind of track it and say, okay, Mississippi's starting to have it, and then Alabama has it, and then Tennessee, and then okay, once Kentucky has it, we're like, okay, now we need
alarm
to
bells go off, right?
Need to stop watching for it. That disease is a tropical disease. It moves with storm systems, but it thrives in high humidity and high heat, and that's exactly what we've been having the last couple weeks. Southern rust is another one to be watching for, to be monitoring for. Good thing is that the majority of the fungicides we use do a good job on tar spot and southern rust, but I do stress be careful of that. We have a lot of good fungicides. I always stress using the fungicide efficacy table that Crop Protection Network has, because there is some fungicides that maybe do well on tar spot but don't do so well on southern rust. I would say the majority, I was looking at this the other day, the majority of them, if it's a good fungicide, is gonna work on both. But do be mindful of the active ingredients you're using. Use that chart to understand, hey, is it good on or very good on tar spot, or it might be poor on southern rust. So maybe if you are seeing southern rust, you're worried about tar spot, it might be worth, you know, looking at those products and active ingredients and trying to find one.
We've got folks in the north that have never dealt with this before, right? I mean, so this is going to be a new venture for a lot of those farmers.
Yes, and I would also stress another thing with southern rust is that out in the field it looks exactly like leaf rust. Leaf rust, we'll see, you know, periodically, usually every year I'll see it. We usually don't worry about leaf rust as much, common rust in corn. But southern rust we do worry about. So I do stress, you know, if you are seeing it, either send pictures or send it to our diagnostic lab. The best way to confirm it is looking at it under a microscope. So having the diagnostic lab actually confirm that it's southern rust is also an important aspect.
So within this, right, I mean, it's nice to have fungicides that hit both southern rust and tar spot. And I feel like you're talking with a forked tongue here, Dan, because you just got done saying that, okay, you got cool, wet conditions, tar spot. And now you just got done saying that it's hot and humid and southern corn. So you got both of those conditions, one of a southern kind of condition, now the tar spot. Mm-hmm. So when do you time it then? Do you try to make sure you get the southern rust before tar spot's really ramping up? Or, I mean, how do you make that call?
You had to do it like yesterday, right in between, right?
Yeah, I mean, you split it. We dropped 20 degrees, yeah. And so you cut southern rust and prevent the tar spot. I mean, what's going on here?
You're a day late and a dollar short.
See, Dan, you know, Darcy goes to Europe, and I'm blaming her. So what I do is I call her. It's a tough question. Yeah. You have to try and time it to control both. You think about southern rust has started to pop up a lot of areas, and areas, if you're probably going to have a problem, you probably can see it now. And then you think about now we're switching to these conditions where tar spot potentially could be ramping up. So in reality, it's probably now is probably
that's
the best
so
time to try and tackle and do the best you can to try and target those diseases. It's what makes it fungicide timing so hard every year is that the diseases don't, it's not, you know, I can't look at the calendar and say July 10th, I'm gonna have tar spot and southern rust. It changes from year to year. So you really have to try and monitor it the best you can, or look at these maps or use these tools that we have to try and get an estimate of, hey, I'm having it or I'm not having it, so I can maybe slightly shift that fungicide.
So as we are cooling down, right, the tar spot environment's good. Southern rust, not as much. You just said it needs the hotter temperatures. So if you've got that present, is it slowing down with these cooler temperatures? So, or, you know, you got it, you need to go ahead and take it out before it continues to multiply.
I was looking at some of those temperatures. It does prefer high humidity and high temperatures, but actually a lot of them, the
range that they get is probably like 80 degrees, right?
Right around 80 degrees.
80 to 95, yeah. So
this time of year, we're saying, it feels nicer, it's cooler. It's still around 80 degrees, so it's, and the humidity is not going to go away either. So I would still stress that you have to pay attention to it. Yeah.
So earlier when Dan said now is the time, if you didn't, you know, put this down and go out and get spraying, like, do that now.
Yeah.
Keep listening, though, for a little while longer. or watching. So, Sean, we've talked about all the things that the Diva has going on.
Yep.
Anything else with soybeans right now? I mean, we talked about the state fair disease.
So a lot of the diseases, I mean, all the diseases we've talked about so far with corn is leaf foliar, right? And so the disease of SDS, brown stem rot, red crown, those are soil-borne that can show up in the leaves, but they're not foliar. The same kind of humid conditions or moderate temperatures are going to be prime for some of our leaf diseases. So the Cercospora, the frog eye leaf spot, those types. So we're right in that same wheelhouse of, okay, we got some foliar disease pressure that's probably going to be spiking. You look at frog eye leaf spot, it particularly likes the younger leaves. So depending on where you are in development, again, we've got it across the board from V4 soybeans to R4. Where are you at in that development? And then take a look and say, do we have some of these lesions popping? And, you know, we still have an opportunity for fungicide applications within those. Insects wise, I haven't seen a lot of pressure, and we've had some conversations already today. Some say, I've seen more Japanese beetle or not. So there's still some scouting to be done to say, okay, do I need it or not? And to be judicious with those applications.
Well, I gotta ask, what about the rat turds too? You know, that's another disease.
Yeah, white mold. So this is, Eric was totally dumbfounded with rat turds.
I was like, okay, where are we going with this?
Yeah, rat turds, right?
There we go.
Okay. Well, you start off with eating a splinter of a fork, so he can go to rat turds.
Yeah, we
that was in your meal,
there.
Right?
I still had to pay for some of them.
That's
anyway,
right. So the little mouse turds that he's talking about, right? He's talking about governing into white mold, the fruiting bodies of that. And so that disease, all right, the infection's gonna occur on the flowers, right? And so we go back to, okay, we made it through June, most of July, we think about high humidity, moderate temperatures, and then an area that's already had the white mold. So the sclerotinia that's there, the sclerotia is what he's talking about. And so then they're gonna grow up from the soil and then they're gonna just burst out their spores and then they're the flowers. When we had Darcy on, we were both like, yeah, I don't think white mold risk is that great. We had the same conversation probably 2 years ago, I think, and then it's like, yep, nothing there, it's flowering, and then they're dropping their flowers, and then all of a sudden we got in now. Exactly, moderate temperatures, decent humidity, and so I dare say there is probably some white mold potential out there if you've had a history of it, and again, the crop is flowering. It can be R3 and still have flowers, and we typically say R1, R2, so that's first bloom to full bloom is gonna be the primary to apply that. Those fungicides, and they are different, primarily different than what we think about with the frog eye leaf spot. So we don't have the twofer like you got when you talk about southern rust and tar spot. Hey, just go for that one fungicide and gets it all. We do need to know what we're targeting. So I'll repeat, if we still got flowering occurring, R3, even the R4, and you've got this moderate temperature and high humidity, which I think everyone's had, we had dew that stayed on till noon basically most every day for a while. We probably need to be mindful of getting some fungicides out.
Now, are your soybeans sweating? Are they producing?
They glow.
Respiration?
They glow, right? Okay. No, actually, I think that's corn. The Diva. We got to stay with the Diva, right? Okay, all right, it's okay. Corn sweat. No, it's corn. It's glowing.
This is the problem.
Perspiration.
They blame corn, but soybeans are also sweating.
Yeah, they are.
Never bring them up.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Let's talk about corn sweat.
Oh boy, here we go.
Let's get into this.
Yeah. What do you have? 72-hour protection to get rid of this odor? You know, okay. Are you going plus? I mean, what are we going with this?
Exactly. Antiperspirants. We're going to be spraying those on corn.
Okay. So like zinc and aluminum. I just don't know. Okay.
So Dan, you were a star in the Indy Star. I saw an article here recently within the past, I don't know, a couple weeks, talking about corn sweat.
Yeah.
Break this down for us. Break it down.
The amount of media interviews, because the national media just loves to take this and run with it. Mm-hmm. It comes up every year. So it's just the idea of the corn adding to the humidity in the air. So it's a process called transpiration, which is normal. That's why
soybeans do it too.
Not to be confused with transfiguration.
Perspiration or
transpiration. So it's just a process of that plant taking up water, using water, and then releasing it through their stomates back to the atmosphere. So every year this comes about, and we want to point to the states that have a lot of acres of corn. They want to point to, that's why it's so humid in the Midwest, is the corn. But actually, when you kind of step back, looking at actual transpiration rates of corn, really I step back, you know, why it comes a topic this time of year, typically in July, is typically when corn is at pollination, that R1 silking stage, that is peak transpiration. That's the most that crop will transpire in its life cycle. So that's really why we start pointing the fingers in the month of July.
I started this just so you know.
I was wondering.
I think it was the soybean agronomists were slowly pushing this. Uh-huh. in the
anonymous scenes. Calls to the reporters. Have you heard of this corn sweat?
but this isn't like... This isn't a thing, right? Like,
it's very minor.
It's a thing, but it's not a thing.
It's very, very minor. So, to put it in perspective, corn transpires at R1. It transpires anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 gallons of water per acre per day. Now you think about that number and you go, oh my goodness, that's quite a bit. But we always use the reference of an acre inch. So an inch of rainfall over an acre is 27,000 gallons of water. Eric's pool that he never lets us go in is about 18,000 to 20,000 gallons of water. But so is it a factor? Sure, it's a very small factor because everything transpires. Your garden transpires, your lawn transpires, the soybeans transpire, the trees transpire. It's also just naturally humid in the Midwest. There's some work done out of Illinois. Some of their climatologists tried to look at this a little bit closer, and they still found that the kind of the system, the atmospheric systems, the storm systems coming off the Gulf and the southern, and then also the atmospheric layers there. they were talking about, well, it depends on the layer of the atmosphere, where you are, and all these things. So it's a very complicated question. But they've still found that a lot of these atmospheric systems and these storm systems were the biggest drivers of this high humidity. Yeah. So is it a factor? Sure, but it's just a small factor. And a lot of these stories are, their headlines are, this is why it's so humid in the Midwest. It's the corn. And it's like, stop blaming the corn.
If you're walking in the middle of a cornfield, it's pretty humid, right? Yeah. So I mean, just don't walk in a cornfield and it's done.
From what I'm taking away from this is that we need to start planting more soybeans.
There you go. Yep, I got that.
Probably, you know, just more wheat.
I think so. Yeah, we'll cover that. No problem.
If we drop corn, won't be so humid.
Yeah,
I can take vacations in the summer.
and Dan's hair won't have all these problems with the humidity.
There you go. True. That's right.
True.
Whether it's straight or curly or wavy. Yep.
Yep.
As we wrap up the Purdue Crop Chat, big question here at the State Fair.
Not answering it.
What's your favorite thing about the state?
That
you can answer.
So we got 2 weeks until you say, what's the number? Okay. Favorite thing at the State Fair, it's got to be the food. I enjoy going to the food. So I'm going to get my garbage burger, pit potato, lemon shake cup. Enjoy that. Go around Pioneer Village. Love going back and just talking to folks there and seeing the old equipment. And I like going to 4-H exhibits and just seeing what these high schoolers and teenagers put together. It's just flat amazing. So finish it up with a nice milkshake across the way, and I call it a day.
Dan?
Yeah, I got to say the food is always one of the best parts of the fair, but I would echo Sean that I always enjoy the 4-H aspects of what the students do. I always enjoy the livestock and the animals. You know, I grew up around livestock. My wife was a 4-H kid her whole life, so she, you know, we always like going to both county fairs and the state fair every year because she grew up in that and showing hogs and stuff like that. So that's something I always enjoy. I enjoy what the kids do and the students do and just the time and effort they put in. So I always enjoy seeing that.
I'm going to go ahead and say, here's a proud dad moment. We really got into 4-H for the first time this year with my kids and all did well. And my middle daughter, she got reserve grand champion on her blondie. So we got some good baking going on. Yep.
There you go. And then, you know, the next question would be, what is the soybean yield going to be this year?
Led you into that.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
He likes, come on. He wants us to give us a number so he can tell us we're wrong.
All right, 58.5.
58 and a half there. Dan?
Oh, boy. Corn. I'm going to go 190.
190. And just as a refresher, record yield would be?
60.
60, and?
I think it's 203.
203, so records. No records this year.
We've got,
I think there's enough variability. I don't think we're hitting record.
Danny Downer here.
The problem is we need to, you know, tell Iowa to knock it off. I mean, they still have, you know, like 90% good to excellent crop over there.
Yeah, it looks tremendous this year, at least on the ratings.
Every other farmer in the U.S. is like, can't believe that, Iowa State. So, yep.
Well, guys, thanks for coming here to the fairgrounds and doing this one today. Hope you enjoy your time.
I will now that I'm about done with you. I can get the food.
We've been together for a while.
Well, we have all morning.
Yeah. We've been doing other
It's even the afternoon
together.
Now. My goodness.
It is. Yeah. I mean, so we can go our separate way. Man, I was going to offer to buy lunch too.
But no, now, you weren't.
Now he wants to go away.
That's a lie.
No, you weren't.
I was going to offer to buy lunch, but I mean, it was true. It's funny. I was going to put it on the company card.
No, that's fine. We can do that.
You know, we're going to. I want to say thanks to Greg Allen, our producer today, doing some things with the video and the audio. So thanks to Greg.
He's going to do some heavy editing after this. Full head of hair. You know,
only on me.
Okay.
Only on me.
That's a cartoon picture right here.
Yeah. That's all he gets paid to do is make me look good. You guys, who cares?
We're naturally good. We're all right.
I just got real deep in here in the dorm anymore. Hey, thanks for joining us on the Purdue Crop Chat. Really appreciate it. Dan, Sean, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.